where you at? All right, everybody, we're back for another episode of the Binge Boys podcast. I'm your host, Logan. Excuse me, I have something in my throat. Just ate dinner, so got a little something in my throat. I don't know what, but we're back for an episode of the Run Through, and I've got a guest with me today. But before I introduce him, got a couple programming notes right off the top. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. But if this is not your first time, welcome back. As I said, I'm Logan, and on Tuesdays, the main episode of the show, that is when we talk about the hottest of what's going on in today's movies and TV, and that's what I do with Matt and Tanner. Now, today's Thursday, the day you're listening to this, and you're like, what are we doing today, Logan? Well, let me tell you. On Thursdays, we have bonus episodes, and they usually are the run-through, which is what we're doing today, but there also could be rewatches, they could be interviews, they could be trailer breakdowns, they could be whatever fits that week. And this week it's a run through, and the run through essentially is getting together with a co-host who wants to talk about a particular movie, usually from the past, for when the Binge Boys didn't exist. We kind of missed the mark. We weren't able to review it back when it released. So it's kind of a way for us to revisit old classics or movies that completely bombed and kind of revisit why they bombed or why they were a success. And that's what we're doing today. Number one, go to all of the socials. It could be Twitter, it could be TikTok, trying to get rolling on there, and Instagram at Binge Boys Pod. That's it. It's where you get reviews, videos, top five lists, announcements, whatever it is. It's on the socials. So if you want, just follow along. It's easy. And then go to iTunes or Spotify and just make sure you've left a 5-star rating. That's all we ask. You can do it on Spotify now. So if you're primarily a Spotify listener, have no fear. You can rate us on there now. So that's all good stuff. Today, I've got Asher with us today. What's going on, my friend?
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good, good. So Asher is here with me today, and we're going to be talking all about Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy. But before we get into The Legend of Ron Burgundy, I think it's fitting that we talk about the legend of the Sunday Poles guy. Asher, what? I mean, I guess we got connected on Twitter, where I'm sure you've connected with a ton of people. And I guess I'm just going to ask the question that maybe a lot of us have that nobody's maybe asked is, what started you on the Sunday Poles thing? Explain it to the people who have no idea what it is. I'm sure there's going to be people that see us promoting on the socials and check out the episode that follow both of us or you or me or whatever. But for people who have no idea, what started it?
Yeah. First of all, thank you for the intro. I really appreciate that. I'm Asher. Like tongue in cheek, but you know, just because I keep it as the name on all my socials, the Sunday Poles guy, which is a fun little thing I've been doing for the last, I think we're on year four now. But it's really, obviously it took off during COVID, but essentially it's just Instagram polls. That's all it is. There's really nothing too special to it. But for whatever reason, whether it's the questions that I ask or, you know, the way that I interact with people when they want to ask me questions or whatever it is about myself, but it has developed this sort of cult-like following. I started it back in, I think we're coming up on year four because it's March of 18, I think is when is my earliest highlight of it. I think I may have had some stuff before Instagram had the ability to like archive things. So it may be even older than that. But essentially I was up late one night. I had some pretty bad insomnia during a brief stint in college and I just couldn't sleep. And so I remember posting on a story being like, oh, can't sleep. Who else is up? And I noticed that, like, you know, maybe 100, 200 other people were also up at like 4 a.m, not necessarily like, you know, like on a weeknight during school. And so if I had a bad insomnia night, I would just throw up these Instagram polls to try to like have fun with people that were also awake. And then I noticed that obviously Instagram stories are up for 24 hours. So yeah, while I did it for the other insomniacs, they would stay up all day. And so even during the day, people would interact with them and be like, you know, oh, this, that, you know, either reply and share their opinions or continue to vote on it. And so I kind of made that, I started doing, you know, these embrace debate polls where I would if something would come up, I would pull it, but it wasn't, it had no regularity to it, really. It was just kind of whenever I wanted to, I'd throw something up. COVID came around, and I thought it was a great opportunity to use my platform to try to keep everyone entertained, right? Everyone was, we were told 15 days, right? 2 weeks.
Right.
Flatten the curve, stop the spread. Yeah, well, so I was like, 15 days, I could do 15 days. This is easy. So I did 10 Instagram polls a day, every day for longer than 15 days. I think I got to about day like 30 or 35 where I basically burned out. Yeah. So it was like a month of just, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of polls. And yeah, basically it was too much all at once. And I, at some point was like, okay, I like the idea. I need to find a balance of when to do it and how often. And then I had the idea of doing it weekly, about 20, you know, somewhere between 15 to 25 polls a week, depending on, you know, what I get or what I think of. And then Sunday just felt like the opportune day, right? You're hungover in bed, you're at brunch, you're with friends. You're just like, you want to get your mind off of everything and kind of just go into this little make-believe world. And so thus the name, and yeah, and the name came pretty organically. Sunday Polls and the Sunday Polls Guy. Pretty simple.
That's so sick, man. I had no idea that it had been going on for around 4 years. That's crazy.
Yeah, the weekly aspect of it is probably about 2 years old now. You know, having that sort of organization to it. But even then, still, like back in the early days of college, people would always be like, oh, you should put this on your Instagram. Like next time you do a, you know, an Instagram poll or something, ask this. Like people, there wasn't the branding and whatnot came a little bit later, and having that sort of organization to it. That was later down the road, but yeah, it's, and now it's blossomed into this really cool thing. I think when the pandemic started, again, let's make it very clear. I'm nobody. I'm nothing special. I had about like 1700 though followers on Instagram. And I think we're almost double that now. I'm at like 32, almost 3300. And I have been, I guess, librarying everything. So I've been going through my archives and putting all of the poll data that I have into like Excel files. And I'm doing, you know, not to my own horn, but I'm doing, you know, 100% improvement year over year. The numbers are up, you know, everything's up. People are sharing it. It's nice. It's fun. And it's, you know, it's like anything else. It's like, you know, Binge Boys podcast, like anything else. It's just something you do. And if you have fun doing it and people like it, it's going to grow. So it's been very exciting.
That's exactly right. And I'm sure it's gotten to the point where like maybe you're off by maybe, you know, 30 minutes, couple hours, whatever on a Sunday when you're supposed to do the polls, and people might start hitting you up and they're like, hey, where's the polls? And it's just gotten to that point where you care about it so much. Like you said, it's such a small thing, but if people like it and you like it, like why the hell stop?
It's funny you say that, like people, I'll get that all the time. So I've been pretty good. They go up about 1:30 Eastern Standard on Sundays. I'll be late, but I'll like mention. I'm like, hey guys, I'm moving slow today. The hangover is extra bad, or you know something came up. I'm gonna be a little late, right? And most of the time people know. But what's really funny, and this is where I knew I was onto something with picking Sundays, is because Sunday is everyone's hangover day.
Yeah.
And so I'll get texts from people that are just like, wildly, they're ripping hungover, right? It's like they went out Thursday or Friday, right? And so the next day is either Friday or Saturday or something, and then all of a sudden they're like, "Dude, where are the polls? Why haven't you posted?" And I'm like, "It's not Sunday," and they're like, "Oh, shut up! No way, really?" I was like, "Yeah," but they have this Pavlovian condition, like I'm hungover, my head hurts, let me go to Asher's Instagram. I'm like, that's like a response, and that happens, and so people will, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that's insane. I think I followed you on Twitter for a period of time without even following you on Instagram. So for the longest time, I was like, man, why is this guy just called the Sunday Polls Guy? Like, and then I think you popped up as a suggested account at some point, and I thought, oh shit, this is why they call him the Sunday Polls Guy. That's sick.
Yeah. I don't know, because my full Twitter handle is like Sunday Polls Guy on IG. Like it does say that in the name. But I guess not everyone, like maybe you don't see the full thing, but I do get that a lot where people, because I'll try to do some cross, you know, cross platform marketing or whatnot. Like I'll post screenshots of the polls or things like onto my Twitter and all sorts of stuff. And people be like, wait, these are so much fun. Like you should do more. I'm like, I do 20 every single week and I have been forever. Just go on my Instagram. And they're like, oh, I didn't even know you had an Instagram. It's like, it's in the name. It's in the, you know, there's so many, and you can imagine, it's like, I'm only pushing this thing everywhere. So just read it, you know, do me one, click into something one time for me. Just a little bit of curiosity, dig in a little bit and you'll find it.
That's so, so true, man. I mean, I can't tell you how many times that people will be like, oh, you do a podcast? I'm like, I only post everything that the podcast posts to my Instagram story. I throw everything on my Twitter. At this point, if you still don't know that I do it, and I've done it for same thing as you 3-4 years now, if I've done it this long and you still don't know, then that's just on you at that point.
Yeah. It's like, I'm, you know, I have to drag the horse to water and put the straw in its mouth. And then it's like doing everything just short of making the horse drink. And that's all on us. So.
Yep. It's true.
For sure.
Well, good stuff, man. Thanks for giving me that background. Cause not only do people now know, but now I know, which is just dope. So we're talking about the Anchorman, which, I'm going to run through some information about it for people who may not know. So I'll just quickly go through and say that Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy was released on July 9th, 2004, which just that in and of itself, I was like, oh my God, it's been 20 years since this movie released.
Yeah.
Directed by Adam McKay, starring Will Ferrell as Ron Burgundy, Paul Rudd, Brian Fantana, David Keschner. I've never known how to say that guy's name.
Keckner.
Okay. As Champ Kind, Steve Carell, Brick Tamlin, Christina Applegate, Veronica Cornerstone. The list goes on. The movie is about Ron Burgundy, who is San Diego's top-rated newsman in the male-dominated broadcasting of the 1970s, but it's all about to change for Ron and his cronies when an ambitious woman is hired as a news anchor. Asher, this is something I do all the time. It's a fun game I love to play, and that's guess the Rotten Tomatoes score. Unless you've already done the research and you know, I want you to give it a shot. Critic score and audience score, what do you got on Anchorman?
Yeah, so I actually do. I do keep a movie spreadsheet thing myself where I rate movies. I give them a score. I do keep the Tomatoes thing. I don't have it open. I'm looking at the tab on my computer. Trust me when I say that it is not open. But I do know a couple things about the movie. I don't think it was critically acclaimed very well. I mean, I know it's a, and we'll get into it, but like it is, you know, it's a Will Ferrell, like, you know, that those early Adam McKay sort of Apatow crew films where it's the most quotable movie of all time. Like, you know, I could give you the whole movie right here on this podcast, just quoting it. But I want to say, like, let's say critics was, we're going to go, I want to say 60s, I'll say 66, and I'll say audience liked it a little bit more. We'll pump it up to like 87.
Which is just awesome because critic score, you nailed it, 66%. Audience score, we got just a hair under at 86%. So right on the money, my man.
Wow. You're gonna think I'm cheating. I promise you. I swear to God, I'm not. I promise you, I'm not.
I absolutely trust you for now knowing that you also keep a spreadsheet full of scores and ratings and whatnot. Yeah. I do not doubt that you are a movie savvy guy. So I'll throw this at you.
Yeah.
So box office wise, the budget for this movie was $26 million, which at the time, that's a ton of money.
Yeah, you gotta think it's 04, right? So it's not
absolutely stuff. Opening weekend, the movie made its budget back. It made $28.4 million, and then all time it made $90.7 million, which seems low, but I mean, at the time, like $90 million, that's a success if I've ever heard it.
Yeah. And you also gotta think, you know, well, again, I was gonna say the rule of thumb nowadays, you say like a movie's budget is really double what's reported because of marketing and whatnot.
Sure.
But maybe, you know, marketing's probably not as heavy like back in 04. So let's say, so, okay, what was it? Here, I'll pull it up too, so I have numbers. So, okay, budget 26. Let's call it 40 million maybe with marketing.
Sure.
You know, 90 million in the box office. That's, you know, double your budget and then some. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, on paper, it's, you know, it, good ROI. We're in the green at that point. Yeah. Yeah, I'm reading it now. Regarded as one of the best comedies of the early aughts. Yeah, I love this movie so much. This is, but yeah. So I mean, it's obviously not like the super blockbusters of today's world. Also, I mean, comedies aren't the same. Budgets aren't the same. So, but yeah, 90 million, double X their budget. That's a success.
Absolutely. So now, after reading that kind of general info, I just want to hear, like, and we'll just go back and forth a little bit, but like, what's this movie mean to you? Do you know where you were when you saw it for the first time? Were you a kid that, you know, that mom and dad were like, no, you're not going to see that, so you snuck it at like a friend's house? Like, where were you when you saw Anchorman for the first time?
Yeah. So what's really funny is I don't remember so vividly the first time I saw it. I'll give you a little background. My dad was a student of comedy. He did some stand up, you know, in his later years. But one of the things is we always had Comedy Central on. He's always watching stand up. We always loved funny movies. So I love comedy. I love like the study of it, the minutiae of it, all like the little things, the writing, deliveries, everything about that is always, you know, always stands out to me and always some things that I look for almost to a fault, right? I can overanalyze things. And anyway, but for whatever reason, like, you know, the Will Ferrell McKay movies, the early ones, and we'll get into maybe some of the other ones, always stood out to me. And so vividly, I remember, and this is funny because like you see these memes now, it's like there was an era where like the funniest thing a group of kids can do is just sit in a circle and quote Anchorman. And like that's like Anchorman and Step Brothers. And that's just, I have such a vivid memory of being in high school. So much later, like probably it was at least 10 years after the movie was out. Cause I graduated high school in 14. So maybe less than that. Maybe it was like 11 or 12, right? Freshman, sophomore year of high school. I just remember putting this movie on with my buddies and we basically didn't even let the movie happen. We just sat there and we screamed at the TV every line because we knew what was coming. We knew how the delivery was. If someone botched the line, we would basically like flame them. We'd be like, "You're an idiot. You don't know this movie." And we just sat there for the full movie, and we just did it. We just ran through the whole thing, and we really were like, we were just like sitting there, you know, twiddling our thumbs, being like, "This is the best. This is the funniest movie of all time." And I still think it is today. I actually, before we started recording, I rewatched the whole thing. So I just threw it on. Because I have every streaming service. What's up? Shout out me. It's on Paramount Plus for anyone who wants to watch it. And yeah, I just threw it on and I watched the whole thing through. And it's like, there are some things you go back, you're like, you can point at something and go, that's funny, but you're not laughing necessarily, which is what I do, especially nowadays a lot. I very rarely like laugh. I'll just be like, oh no, that is funny. Like, I'm not going to laugh, but I acknowledge the humor there. But like, there's still points in this movie, a couple brick moments, couple like little one-liners from like again, background stuff that maybe you don't think about that I'm still just dying laughing at every time I watch this movie. It's almost 20 years old, but yeah, man. It holds a special place in my heart. It's really, I love Will Ferrell. I think he's amazing. I mean, he's, you know, it's no secret that the recent Will Ferrell movies aren't as great. And obviously there was a, you know, it's not the best thing that happened between him and McKay and the split. We don't love that. It's not, you know, but we'll always have this sort of like the early 2000s era, you know, Will Ferrell movies and like these early, you know, star studded, like Seth Rogen is in this movie and he has, I think two lines total in the entire movie. You're talking about Seth Rogen, who's like a bona fide superstar right now in his own right. I mean, the cast is, Catherine Hahn is like the 16th billed person on this thing. What is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. She's like ninth, and now she's going to star in her own like Marvel Cinematic Universe like TV show coming up soon. It's insane. Right. It's absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I rewatched the movie on Saturday, and it'd been a long time since I'd seen it. But like you said, it's just one of those movies that the quotes are thrown around in society so much that you almost like forget that they're from Anchorman. And when I'm watching the movie, and my fiance, she had never seen the Anchorman somehow. So she's just sitting there, and I'm geeking the whole time. Like every joke, I'm just sitting there, just laughing my ass off. And she found, which is funny, and we'll kind of get to it, this is kind of a good segue, that she found that a ton of the humor is incredibly misogynistic. And
it's terrible. It's so bad. You can't make that movie today. But the thing is that was the like the second layer of the comedic writing. It's
right.
We're gonna make a movie that just showed how I can swear on here, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, just how fucking awful. And so the pieces of shit that used to run like 1970s like newsrooms, like that's a. They say that it's loosely based on like basically a guy in Detroit. Like, you want women on TV? Ha! Ha! Yeah, right. And that's basically like, and then that's Adam McKay's like funny little thing about him is he'll take this aspect, this little bad thing, right? Bad thing that's not supposed to happen. And he'll just sit there and he'll pull that thread and be like, listen to how ridiculous this all sounds right now in today's era. And that's what he did. Talks about, you know, a 1970s misogynistic, it's funny and we'll get into it maybe, but it's misogynistic, but the most as far as women equality, like Ron Burgundy and Veronica Cornerstone, they get into a straight up like wrestling match. He's beating the shit out of her, and like that's like he's like fighting a woman, and everyone's like, no, let the two of them hash it out. Where it's like in any sort of like workplace anything, it's like you should never hit a woman, and you gotta you can't do that in office. And they're like, no, let the two of them just absolutely duke it out, like. And that's the third or fourth layer of like the jokes that he's trying to put. It's like, yeah, it's supposed to be misogynistic. How ridiculous does it sound? Where everyone goes, no, that's just life. That's just how we do it.
And they take it even a step further. We usually kind of spend a minute talking about whether the movie got a sequel or not, and it did. And I'm very curious about your opinion on that. But then that movie, the sequel, takes it a step further and kind of introduces like how Ron starts to work for a black woman at the network, and is just incredibly racist as well. Like, it's just the clever writing that Adam McKay like knows what he's doing. And he's like, I'm going to treat it as if Ron, you know, was the most misogynistic, most racist person, but he's writing it in a way that doesn't come off like, oh, these people are racist that made this movie. Like the writing here is, just too good.
I would almost, I feel like a similar comparison in like maybe today's sort of scope is like when the Colbert had the Colbert Report, right? So Stephen Colbert is playing an actor, or he's playing a character of a right-wing politician who like blindly agrees with everything they do, even though it might not be like the best thing. But he's like, no, this is great. It's great for, and so that's the idea is like by making him a bad person, but you frame it in a world where it's like, he's so delusional within his own realm that he knows he's right. It's like eccentric and delusion to a point of like he's a bumbling idiot. Like San Diego, it means a whale's vagina, and she's just like, no, it doesn't. He's like, no, I'm right. I'm definitely right on this one. You have no idea what you're talking about. Like that's the idea. Is it's supposed to be so preposterous that it's almost like it's a little funny. The sequel. I didn't love as much. I think that's not exactly like it was. Again, you're talking about one of the best comedies of the 2000s. It's hard to then top that. I mean, the sequel, let's see, Anchorman. I'm going to pull it up here on my side too. The legend continues. So budget was $50 million, made $173 million at the box office. Yeah, I think there was a lot of hype going into this. It came out 2013, so 9 years after, right? 9-10 years after the first one. I don't think it was nearly as good. The Rotten Tomato score probably reflects that. But yeah, exactly. That's the whole thing. It's like 1970s Ron is like, all right, you want me to deal with women? Fine, fine. Twist my arm. And then it's like you propel him 40 years into the future, and we've introduced a second race into the whole mix. And he's like, I don't, the scene where he's just staring, he goes, black. Black. I just can't. I don't know why, but the only word black is the only thing I can say right now. And again, it's just that yeah, it's the McKay writing style where it's like, no, these are all terrible people, but look how bad they can get.
It's almost the same writing that goes into like writing Michael Scott for The Office in those early seasons, yeah, of like, this guy is like fictionally, like laughably, like there's no such thing as a person like this. Like there's no way that there's a human being that exists out there that is that stupid, that just clueless about what his words are doing. But
yeah. But let's make one and see how he does. See how he fares in the field. That's basically what it is.
Exactly. So it's just awesome.
Yeah. And obviously the other thing with when you think about Anchorman 2 is they, you know, and this is part of them knew that they were just going to be like, all right, we're going to make a second one. We're going to do every callback to the first one. So everything's hammed up, right? The fighting scene, it goes from like Anchorman 1 was 5 news teams. And then Anchorman 2, when they have the fight scene, it's like 12 or something. And it's, and again, that's another, it's a who's who of comedy. You have Jim Carrey, Tina Fey, John C. Reilly, Vince Vaughn returns, like everyone. It's a big, you know, that was not, cash grab is not what you'd think it is, cause it's not like it dominated, but like, all right, people want a second one. We'll do the exact same movie, but you know, 40 years in the future. Fine. I'll do that. You want to twist my arm? No problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the great things, though, and I think was probably lost a little bit in the second one. I mean, they still had some moments you can see from the bloopers. Is that and McKay? I saw an interview with Rob Riggle, and he talks about this a lot. Is that McKay? Let you do whatever the fuck you want. It's so much improv, right? I saw a thing that Rob Riggle, when he worked on Step Brothers, it was like, oh, you could make a whole second movie with what we didn't use. Like all the improv, everything that's up on the cutting room floor, pile that all up, stitch it together. You have Step Brothers, like alternate version, basically. And I'm sure the same thing. And you know, you see all the bloopers on YouTube, or they even do like a sizzle reel, you know, during the credits. But like, okay, it's just like, all right, camera's rolling, get loose, guys. Like, we're gonna have a start point, an end point. Yeah, someone has to make like this note. Someone's got to make this joke. But otherwise, how you get from A to B, I don't give a shit. We'll figure it out later. And he just lets them play. And you know, a lot of the times is you, I did notice that on the second run through, it's like Ron Burgundy refers to a mountain a lot. Like he's like, I want to shout it from a mountain. I didn't have a mountain. That's cause like Will Ferrell just was, it was in his improv zone, a mountain kept coming up. Or like in the bloopers, it's like Great Odin or Great Thor, you know, the sweet Ravens, Odin's Raven or whatever it was. And it's like, by Zeus's hammer, the beard of Poseidon, and all these other, like, it's like, all right, you've got a Greek mythology kick you're working on today, Will. That's fine, let it go. Like, you know what I mean? And so a lot of those same jokes will keep coming up, but that's just because Will's like, here's everything, figure it out. You know what I mean? And so, and they do that. I think that gets a little lost in the second movie. I know there's a lot of Lighthouse. They do a lot of the river of ejaculates. There's a lot in that Lighthouse scene for Anchorman too. But yeah, I mean, that's sort of the beauty. Like, I don't know. I feel like back in the day, it almost feels like in today's world, you have to, like, it feels like you either are doing these like small indie projects or super blockbusters. And it's like, you know, the studios naturally, they're like, well, we want to make money. And we want to not put out bad movies. And so I feel like back in the early 2000s, like, they're like, hey, we're just going to make a movie. We're going to get all our friends together, a bunch of great comedic minds, you know, SNL types and whatnot, or Second City, you know, alumni. And they're just like, we're all going to get together. Because I think this movie, I read somewhere, I was looking at like trivia and stuff. They pitched this movie like 20 times to DreamWorks before they picked it up. Like the thing was like, we're going to just make the movie first. And then worry about it later, where it's like nowadays, you know, with universe building and all this other stuff, and like you have to have the sequel greenlit within the first weekend based on like the return of your budget and everything. It kind of, you know, you lose some of the, you lose the appeal to the, or you can lose some of that when, and it comes through in the movie, right? I think sometimes where it's like back in, and that's why I don't think we're going to see some of these early 2000s style comedies like the Forgetting Sarah Marshall's of the world, or like, you know, that Apatow crew, the McKay crew, even, you know, Adam Sandler, Happy Madison guys, like their early stuff is, you know, revered. Netflix is going to sit here and tell us that every time Adam Sandler makes something, it does $400 zillion by their self-reported numbers. And there's literally no way we can check that. But like, to be honest, it's not, you know, we're not going to, I don't think we're going to see those early 2000s movies because those guys were just like, we're going to have a bunch of fun. We're going to make the movie and worry about the money later, basically.
Exactly. I'm curious. You mentioned, we mentioned a little bit about how some of the comments and some of the writing doesn't age well. Some of it wouldn't work today. No. I'm wondering if upon rewatching the movie, you caught anything that you said, you know what? This movie is 20 years old, but that aged like a fine wine. Like this just works. Yeah. And personally, it's just the chemistry between Will Ferrell and the other three. Like the, And that is something that was just apparent in the sequel as well. Like you could just tell like these four guys, Steve Carell, David, Paul, and Will, just they just love these characters, and they love, like you said, also just the improv of it all. Like the fact that half the movie is just improv is just it's just an absolute blast. And you can just tell like they had a blast making this movie. Like what I would give to just like sit on set for a day and just listen to them bullshit, you know, in between takes and whatnot. Like it'd be so much fun. Is there anything that you caught that you were like, man, that aged perfectly?
I mean, yeah. So there's a lot that doesn't age well. There's, you know, there's especially stuff like comments about Brick that don't fly, Keckner, like, but they said that like Steve Carell even mentioned, like you couldn't make The Office today, and The Office right. like wrapped up, and you know, again, it's all very similar writing. But yeah, those guys, I mean, the characters that they got to play, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't think one person was acting. Like, you know, Steve Carell is not a bumbling idiot, but he basically just took, you know, his office character and was like, okay, let's make him just flat out illiterate. Like, let's just really ham it up. David Koechner playing Will Champ again. It's basically just his office character, but like, you know, a little bit more sports. He gets to be an asshole. Great. Brian Fantana, Paul Rudd, smooth criminal. Like, you know, the Sex Panther scene is still like, I was cracking. He's like, yeah, no, that does smell. Huh? Wonder who's, and everyone's like, smells like Bigfoot's dick. Yeah. And Will gets to be the boisterous, brazen, you know, and he says it. He's like, I'm a man that invented the wheel. It's, and that's like, he believes that. Like, he really, truly, that's sincere to him. As far as things aging, like, overly well, I still think, like, obviously just that dynamic and sort of, like, you know, the going back and forth, the hemming and hawing with Veronica and Burgundy and you know, the idea that, you know, you get sort of like she gets the dagger, right? She's like, hey, he'll read fucking anything you put on that teleprompter. And she, you know, out of spite, she doesn't want, like, she's not mad at Ron. She's almost like, she's just upset that the guy that she loves doesn't support her, right? And then she's like, you know what? I'm gonna, this motherfucker. Like, it's, yep. It becomes totalitarian war with the two of them, where everyone winds up. It's keep going. You have Catherine Hahn's character, Helen, tell her, like, hey, here are the nuke launch codes. I'm not going to push the button, but here's how you do it. Here's how you blow the damn thing up. And she does it. And you can almost see immediately. And you get the scene where she runs out crying, where she says, you know, oh, Ron, like, I didn't mean to do it. I'm sorry. Like, he goes, are you happy? And she's like, no, I'm not happy. But it hits. And this is something I didn't notice in my first watch through. It hits as soon as he says it. He goes, go fuck yourself, San Diego. And you see Veronica Cornickson's face kind of like it pulls back a little bit. where she's like, oh fuck, he really just said it. Like the thing that I set in motion, you know, and I start like that sort of like regret. I don't think back to that, like, I guess sort of, you know, this movie having like any sort of emotional, I mean, we know he gets upset. We know there's the thing with Baxter, but like, there's actually a little something there where like Veronica is so distraught and upset when she finally does that move that like, I don't really appreciate, not to say that this isn't, you know, we're not, this isn't like cinema here. Let's, you know, relax a little bit, but it's Anchorman. But that's a little moment that I was like, wow, I don't really, I feel like that didn't hit me as much. Probably because I'm like, when's the next fart joke coming? When I was like, you know, however yeah. old I first saw this, when I first saw this movie. I'm not looking for, you know, pathos. but yeah, so that was something that kind of like, I just sat there and was like, huh, interesting. And you know, I think the acting's great. Like, you don't like, again, I don't think anyone's acting. I think everyone's just like, they've got their characters. Like, most everyone is... Paul F. Tompkins being that was one I remember. I was like, Paul's in this movie, but I forget how. Like, he's the judge of a kitty cat fashion show. Chris Parnell is just like a doofier, like more emotionally distraught version of his hot rod character. Like, everyone's just playing who they naturally are. But even then, still, it sells. Like Christina Applegate, like those guys are. That is a lot of, for a lot of those, you know, actors, that ends up being their baseline. Like, sort of, like, even you think about Catherine Hahn. She, you know, she goes to play, what the hell's her name? In WandaVision, where she's, like, the nosy neighbor. And you yeah. kind of get that with her and Veronica. Like, that she's like, hey, like, you know, do this, do that. Like, by the way, like, when you stick it up to Ron, that's great. Oh, by the here's the secret. Here's his demise. And I watched that scene. It's 20 years ago. And I'm like, I feel like I just saw this. I feel like I saw this last year. And right. Nosy Nate, I can't remember, Agatha, right?
Agatha, yeah.
That was it? Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing. You've got Ant-Man and Agatha in a 2004 comedy, but yeah.
True. So with all of that said, with all of that Anchorman stuff, I'm going to have to ask you, I know this movie, you love it to death. I'm going to need two things from you. I'm going to need I need you to letter grade this movie, A, B, C, D, mm-hmm. F. You can do plus or minus. If you yeah. have to, and then I need your favorite scene, the one scene that steals the show for you for this movie.
Okay. So I have on my, cause I did bust my sheet out, and I have, right now I have it as a 94 out of 100. It is my, second highest comedy under Monty Python. So I'm going to give that okay. an A. It's I have Monty Python at a 96. And I have it just above, what is that? Jojo Rabbit. I like Jojo Rabbit a lot. That was a 92. That was my favorite scene. I'm trying to think of anything that had me still cracking up laughing. I still think the first anything where they're like they're like a woman. the first time that she's introduced and the four of them are losing it. In Ed's office, yeah. Brian, I love the ladies, don't get me wrong, but they do not belong in a newsroom because it's Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady. And that is a fact. Everyone, Rick Tamlin, loud noises, I don't know what we're yelling about. And they cut to Ron, and Ron's like, they're like, come on, Ron, you've got something bad to say. And he's like, it's terrible. She's gorgeous, and her hair smells like cinnamon. Oh my God! And Brick comes. The bears could smell the menstruation, which I think now that I watch back is like, they're like, he's like, I heard their periods attract bears. They can smell the menstruation, and Brian goes, you hear that? Now you're putting the whole office in jeopardy. There's going to be bears. Bears is how the movie ends. She gets pushed yeah. into the bear pit. I was like, I've watched that back, and I was like, wait, that's when you go, okay. Is that coincidence? Did they say
is that right, foreshadowing?
Improv? Is that improv? And then they're like, okay, but Brick, you have to say this bear line. Or is it they're like, they improv it all. And then at the end of the movie, McKay is like, wait, what if, hang on, guys, we have bears at the end of the movie? Like, what if that's how we wrap it up? Like, that's where you want to be able to sit there and you show it to Adam and Will, and you're like, oh, look at that. I didn't even notice that. Rick makes a it's a bear comment, and bears are what we're dealing with at the end of the movie. And like, he's scared of a bear, but he's cuddling the bear. Or is it, you know, what happened first? That's a big chicken or the egg thing. But that scene to me, it's like, I know it's coming. I know every line that they're going to say. I'm going to say it with them, and I'm going to laugh my ass off. It's still, it gets me every time.
Yep. I'm with you on the rating, especially too. I'm coming in right around an A. It's an absolute comedy classic. It's going to be a movie I show to my kids' kids. It's just one of those all timers in terms of a scene that gets me every single time. And even just sitting here thinking about it is just, especially the scene where, you know, him and Veronica, they go out for the night on the town. He does the flute. Mm-hmm. And then, like, mm-hmm. at the end of the night, they share a kiss and says, like, we need to keep this on the down low. And then it cuts to Ron. Veronica Corningstone and I had sex and we're all in love. And then just immediately, oh my God. Did I say that loud?
No, that wasn't. He just, yeah, just like that. That wasn't me, right, guys? And like, no, you, that was definitely, you're very loud. Yeah. And he says it on the broadcast too. Oh, my God.
Absolute. Just pleasure. And I also just enjoy, and I forgot how much I enjoy it, just the opening credits of, you know, mm-hmm. him doing the warm-up exercises with his mouth, like just screaming in the newsroom, or like when they're at Will's party and it's doing kind of like a one-on-one introduction to each character, and it cuts to Brick mm-hmm. and he's like, I have the IQ of 48, which most doctors call mentally retarded. And just how he plays off that so well. It's just great, like you said earlier, just great performances from the actors, because I don't know how the hell they were able to finish filming this movie. Like, I'd still be filming this movie if I was casted in it. I couldn't get through a scene. It's too good.
Yeah, there was something about him where it was like they all were in the zone. I mean, they have the blooper reels on YouTube and you can go look them up. Some of those still like are so funny. But just like they almost like when they're in the zone, they're like, everything we say is going to be hilarious and no one's going to break. And they could sit there again, because I don't think they were acting. They obviously are. But they're like, those characters to them are just like, yeah, these jokes are going to come easy. And like, and because they obviously they work, you know, well enough together, like everyone knows where, like, okay, I'm going to say something. Ron's going to say something ridiculous. Champ's going to come in, hype it up out of nowhere. Fantana's gonna like second it, and Brick's just gonna word vomit, and that's the scene. And we're doing that every time. Rock and roll, reset, reload, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. And they just, once you get into that zone, they were unstoppable. They could do almost no wrong, unless, you know, someone really came over the top of the break. But like, God damn it, it's so funny. I'm sitting here. I almost want to rewatch it just like right after we're done. Fuck.
Yeah, it's so fucking funny. It's just one of those that, especially for me, like, I love the movie. I don't think about it all the time, but when I do get to sit down and watch it, it's just like, God damn, this movie is so fucking funny. Like, there's so many one-liners that just make it gold, and that's why it's sitting right there at an A. I mean, it doesn't get old. It's one of those you could watch, like you said, you could watch it twice in a night and still crack up as if it was the first time watching it in 5 years. Like, it's just gold.
Yeah. I was also looking, it's like, part of me was like, was it early enough that it was his jumping off point for Will? And I pulled up his IMDb. It's not necessarily, so he had Old School in 03, he had Buddy the Elf in 03, which obviously those are two big ones. But like Zoolander in 01, he was Mugatu. But like you'd see Ron Burgundy, and then it's like, okay, Ron Burgundy 04, Kicking and Screaming 05, Wedding Crashers 05, Talladega 06, like Blades of Glory 07. Like that, it was kind of the start of semi-pro 08. This man was putting out, and Step Brothers in the same year, 08. Like that was, that I, what, not like the start, but definitely in that early phase of like, put out, Will Ferrell's going to have arguably the funniest movie of the year every year for the next however long until I decide to hang it up.
Yeah. Yep. No doubt.
He did Other Guys in 2010. That's another good one. God damn.
God, I fucking love The Other Guys, man. If you want to talk about another movie that I could just quote for hours, just, I love The Other Guys. That shit is so fun. So underrated. A few people here and there, you hear talk about it, but other than that, like, I don't think it gets the attention, mostly because he's had those other standout roles like Step Brothers, like Elf, like Kicking and Screaming, those other movies.
I don't know what it is, but it is like, it's like the lost comedy. It's, and I tweet about the other guys enough where I'm like, well, stop what you're doing. Go watch the other guys. Cause it'll be funnier the last time. That movie gets funnier every single time I watch it. It's so underrated. I don't know what happened. I don't know how it got lost in the shuffle. Yeah. It's not like when people think Will Ferrell movies, they go the big three, Talladega, Anchorman, Step Brothers. And I'm like, yep. Other guys is just as funny. Like,
yep.
he's not playing the, you know, egocentric, like maniac doofus that he is with, like, you know, with Talladega or Burgundy, you know, even Step Brothers, he was a little like self-deprecating, but it was still like, he was like, yeah, but I'm Nighthawk, so fuck you. You know what I mean? Like he plays Alan Gamble, who's this whole thing is to be wildly modest. He's got like the hottest wife in the world. And he's like, please, she's ugly. I know. Let's not talk about it. So I'm telling you right now, I've had a good time with you. If you'll have me back, I'll do the other guys with you. I love that movie. I love it so much. If you give me a reason to rewatch it. Oh my God. It's got Michael Keaton with the TLC references. It's got,
The Rock and Sam Jackson.
Rob and Sam Jackson. The I hope you like prison food and penis. Like it's got heaters in that movie. Oh my God! All right, I could go on. Yeah, that's another movie. That's another one where I could just sit there all day and hammer on about it.
Yep, agreed. Would love, perfect segue again. Would absolutely love to have you back and talk about some more classic comedies. For now, I thank you for joining me, and go ahead and plug yourself, plug the Twitter. We talked about it earlier. Plug the Instagram. Now's your time.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I want to thank you very much for having me. Again, I haven't done too many of these podcasts. I love them. I have a lot of fun with them. You know, we've interacted a good amount on Twitter. I've seen what you do. You know, I'm happy to support the show. I'm definitely going to, you know, push this. I actually, during the intro, I was already throwing some stuff up on Instagram. By the way, so yeah, check those. But yes, my plug time. I am at H Baron on every platform. That is Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Venmo, Cash App. What's up? If you want to send me money, go ahead and do that. I'm at Asher H Baron on every platform. Sometimes the name reads Sunday Polls Guy. Sometimes it just says my name, Asher Baron. But that's it. That's me. Dude, thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely, man. And I will throw those usernames in the description of the episode so people can just click away and get right to those platforms and profiles. And in terms of everybody else, if you like what you heard, just tell a friend. That's all I need you to do. I don't want you to subscribe to a Patreon. I don't want you to send me money, although I will piggyback off of Asher.
Yeah,
I will piggyback off of you, though, and say that would be fantastic. Send me money if you'd like. But other than that, I just want you to tell a friend. We all are constantly talking about movies and TV. We're always asking each other, what's the next thing to watch? Binge Boys has you covered. We'll see you guys next time. Take care, guys. We'll be right back.